meeting to the 11th? Okay.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments on it? Or, can we vote on approval? We have a motion and a second?
Motion.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, June 2nd, please.
June 8th. Move to approve June 8th?
Second.
Oh, yeah. Any questions or comments on it?
I'm just disappointed that our numbers that we were projecting at that point are so much lower.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
So, no comments on this? All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we're down to July 13th.
Move to approve.
Second.
July 13th. Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
September 14th.
Move to approve.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
All our minutes are approved. Any public comments? President's comments. I think everybody's going a little crazy because everyone has respiratory issues right now. Welchek's had respiratory issues. Everybody's tired of it, and they're coming in howling until halfway through. So, I'm just crossing my fingers that this ends, or calms down sometime this winter. And I hope for everybody that we all can hang out. Can hang in there. All right. Budget.
Good afternoon, and thank you for coming today. My name is Jaquetta Gilman, and I joined the Health Department in July as the fiscal manager. Today, I will be sharing with you the 2022 operating budget for the Division of Health. The 2022 expense budget is up approximately 4.9%, or $427,000 versus 2021. This is predominantly driven by a new grant, as well as an increase in our KUSD contract. In addition, revenue for 2022 is budgeted to be up 4%, or $337,000, which would result in an increased levy need of $90,000. There are many ups and downs that make up the overall increases in expenses, and I would like to walk you through the details and highlight some of them. The greatest portion of the expense budget for health is personnel. Approximately 69% of the total $9.1 million budget is expenses for people. Starting at the top are our FTE changes. FTEs are up 3.85 from 2021's total of 60.7 FTE, which would bring our 2022 FTE count to 64.55. We break up those FTE changes into those that occurred in the current years and those that are budgeted for 2022. In 2021, there was an increase for the asthma grant. Prior to 2021, the asthma grant was staffed by a school nurse. In 2021, this became a dedicated 0.75 position of a public health strategist who focuses solely on the asthma grant. In 2022, proposed FTE modifications. As you can imagine, with the opening of the schools during the COVID-19 pandemic, there was a need to increase the number of hours spent at the school by school nurses. This amounted to an addition of 1.21 FTEs. and there's a corresponding increase in revenue, as well as the contract with KUSD being increased to cover this. We are in the process of seeking approval for the SAMHSA grant, which has been awarded to us. If this approval is granted, there are an associated 3.39 FTE, which includes a full and part-time public health strategist, a public health nurse, and an administrative assistant. If approval is not received, these positions and the associated expense and revenues would be removed from this budget. In addition, our Narcan grant ended in 2021. When a grant ends, the positions associated with it are eliminated, so they have been removed from the budget, which is a 1.5 FTE reduction. With all of these changes, the overall changes in salary and benefits after those adjustments are $43,000. This is a mixture of increased salaries as well as savings in several areas as people who were previously on family insurance have changed to single insurance. The next category we have are our contractual changes. There is a $4,600 increase in our data processing costs. This is the anticipated increase that results from our new health record system. Another area with a notable change is our in telecommunications, which has a $12,400 increase. This cost is to provide iPads with internet connectivity to our staff that visit clients off-site, so they are able to maintain records off-site rather than having to come back to the office and enter those in. We did also have a $3,000 increase in our motor vehicle maintenance just based on actual usage. Next, we have our supplies category. We do have $14,000 in machinery and equipment. This is to purchase a colposcope for the clinic and a dilute dispenser for the lab. There is bonding revenue noted in the revenue section for these purchases. Advertising decreased to nearly $9,000. This is a result of the Narcan grant ending, which had a large advertising budget. The Narcan grant ending also resulted in a $75,000 reduction in lab and medical expenses. Staff development increased by $15,000. This line item was reduced in 2021 with the assumption that most training would remain virtual. We are beginning to see these trainings transition back into in-person, so the expenses will be increasing to attend those physically. Next, we have our fixed charges. We had a $7,000 increase in our insurance costs for public liability insurance. However, we had a $26,000 decrease in our overall building rent between the job center and the RKCAA WIC location. We did have an increase in cost for our leased vehicles of $6,000. And we did not have any significant changes in our purchase services or interdivisional cost allocations. That is the summary of our expenditures. Next, we have our revenues. In revenue, we have several grant allocations that had reductions. As we see the clinic shift from COVID work back into normal services, we do anticipate seeing a small increase in revenue there. The biggest revenue change would be the addition of the SAMHSA grant, which is around $400,000. There is a reduction in the city contribution of nearly $500,000, which Tammy Capito will go over with you shortly. As an offset to this reduction, we are proposing to use ARPA funds to offset the temporary reduction in revenue. This overall will increase in a levy increase of $90,356. Next, we have a summary of the revenues that the health department receives. We continue to be predominantly funded through grants, contracts, fees, and federal and state funding. We moved from 55% grant funding in 2021 to 58% grant funding, and our revenue from contracts and fees increased from 18% to 21%. The next three pages are all of our fee schedule. The federal poverty level did change, so that was updated, but our associated fees did not change with that. And then we have Tammy Capito to go over more details regarding the city contribution.
right, so every year, we have a third party that does a cost allocation, which is Maximus. And in 2020, obviously, we had COVID stuff going on, so we had a lot of extra revenue, we had less expenses, and we were serving different clientele. So in 2019, the city portion was 66%, and in 2020, that went down to 53.78%. I also wanted to show, point out how we come up with how much they owe us. So the next, as of 7/24, their net costs were $2,435,000. That is the revenue less the expense that they proposed to us. The city portion of that, based on the Maximus cost allocation, is 53.78%. So that means the city portion of the total health budget for 2022 is $1.3 million. Of that $1.3 million, based on the tax portion that the state provides us, they get levied $827,000. So we take that off of what they owe us, and then the net payment that they would pay to us is the $482,000. Any questions on the city contribution?
How does that compare to last year?
Last year, they were at $900,000. From 900,000 to the 482, and that's based off the percentages. So they were at a 66% last year for the 2019 actual. And because of the COVID and the different clientels and not working on normal services, that percentage went down, as well as the city got rid of the charge of 26. They're taking on that themselves as well. So that brought down that percentage as well.
And if you wanted the exact amount on that in section 11, it does have the exact amount of the 21 city contribution less to the proposed budget.
Any questions?
Under the FTE changes, where did the COVID staff, like contact tracers and everything else,
sit? Those are temporary staff, so we have the authority to add those as needed without it going through the budget.
I'm curious about the addition of the colonoscope. Is that for your STI clinic?
Correct.
When the federal poverty line changed, what was the reason that the fees for services didn't?
Sorry, I couldn't.
The federal poverty line changed, why didn't the fees for services change?
There would be increasing the fees to correspond with the poverty level, and we didn't feel that the fees needed to be increased at this time.
Any other questions for them? We have to approve, correct? We have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. On to health officers' reports.
Great, thank you. I just heard. I'm trying to see if Dominique is the only new one. So every October, we have to do a budget approval. And so that goes through the Board of Health. So that's why you got the formal thank you, Jaquetta. You did amazing for that report out and all the information. And everything is transparent. Anytime you need any information, you know, we can share that. This is sort of the big once a year where we share the whole budget. But if you ever need anything at any time, we can, Jaquetta can always come back and answer any questions. And yes, RSV is going around. Three of the five members of my family have it. So it's everywhere. I was looking back at some research from last winter, you know, desperate for all this research on COVID, right? And several scientists did predict that RSV would be bad come this December. So it's just a little bit earlier than even was predicted. And I'm predicting another RSV season next winter as well, too. Just from an outlier from COVID. So it's respiratory forever will be issues, right? All right. So we're seeing lots of that. As far as a COVID update, our cases are starting to come down or stabilize a little. We don't want to talk about it, really, for fear of jinxing ourselves. Hospitalizations have sort of stabilized. We aren't seeing too much of a decrease yet, but at least they're not rising. So that's where we sit with hospitalizations. We're still averaging about one death a day, And that's to be expected epidemiologically. So when you have cases, the death curve always sort of follows that. So we are right in the height of the death curve right now. So that is terrible that we're still seeing, you know, that large number per day. Our schools, I just wanted to give a couple statistics. In July, 17% of our cases were under age 18. In August, they were, I'm all fogged up, sorry, hold on. I keep reloading up. In August, they were 21%. And in September, they were up to 29% of our cases. So the kiddo rates are going up. And of course, this is also bringing with a whole new lot of research as far as, you know, how much are kids affected. The big fear is obviously, even though kids aren't maybe as affected with hospitalization or death, that they're the vectors that can carry it to the very vulnerable grandparents and that sort of thing. So that is what we're still working hard to mitigate there. Testing is a bit of a debacle. We are no longer testing here at the Job Center because now there are more entities coming into Kenosha. None of these have been vetted through us, just so you're aware. Not that they have to, but it causes great concern because some of these are sending to labs that aren't reporting through our WES system, the Wisconsin Electronic Disease Surveillance System. So we have are not getting some of these lab results. Then we get parents calling us, the schools calling us, and we have no record of it. We get all the complaints that these testing sites are not changing their gloves, or the lines are too long, or what's going on. So we're trying very hard to become the testing police, and we're trying very hard to mitigate that to ensure that there's enough testing happening in the county. As you know, University of Wisconsin-Parkside also stopped their testing at the end of last month, so we're having a bit of some testing issues, and the one thing we keep trying to reiterate with people is to not rely on the home tests, because again, those aren't reported to us. The schools are still, if somebody reports a home test that's positive, they will isolate that person on public health's behalf, but it's a bit of a debacle. So schools are taking enormous human resources right now, and with 11 school districts, and they're all on different plans and protocols. Some are masking, some are not, some are quarantining, some are not. So it's a bit all over the place, whereas last year it was much easier. Everybody was following the same guidelines. So even though last year we had a really, really high spike, it was much easier to mitigate. So that's where we are with working with the schools, obviously. And my mind just went blank. I had something else I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, while your mind's blank, can I just ask about, you know, I want to revisit this issue that we talked about at the orientation piece or last month meeting,
yeah,
about the ability for testing to be done in the schools with a state grant or whatever it is, but that it's really just too many hoops for the school to jump through. So I actually did a shift in the urgent care last week, which we were the week before, and I think there were 30 COVID tests in like a 4-hour time frame. I mean, it was just ridiculous, and a lot of it was, you know, kids that want to go back to school and can't, and I just see that, you know, what an important issue it is that we're keeping our, you know, to help keep our kids safe. Is there any way, since our nurses in the schools are contracted from the health department, that CLIA waiver could go through the health department versus each individual school that our nurses, that yeah, our school nurses can do that instead?
Unfortunately, no. And there would be all sorts of liability issues with our school nurses actually doing the testing in the schools. So that's where there's, you know, it's, I mean, dare I say, it's not like huge operational loops. Yes, there's some logistical things that the schools have to set up, and they still can join at this point. I know I just received a list from the state of Moore that have reached out, but it's mostly our private parochial schools that have reached out to the state to get more information so that they can hopefully provide testing. I still continue to push it with the schools that, hey, this is a free option. I think probably there's significant pushback on parents too. We're definitely hearing daily about how parents don't want their kids tested because they don't want them to miss homecoming or Friday night's football game, or, you know, so there's or they're doing the home test and they're not reporting it to the school, whether it's positive or negative, because they just don't want to, you know, have it known that their child or their, you know, whoever is positive. So there's a whole lot surrounding that, but we continue to make it available, and we're here as a resource to help if any of the schools want to get a testing program in their school.
And do all of, do, does the entire KUSD have to participate in order to do that, or can individual schools participate? And
In the state's program, individual schools can. I'm sure KUSD would want it to be in all our, I'm speculating, I'm sure that they would want to make sure that it's something across the board.
Because I'm just trying to, if there's any other ways out of the box to utilize that resource here.
Yeah, because we do have a testing issue, you know, and then that drives more people to the home tests, which causes an even bigger, it just snowballs, so.
And the rapid test kits are on short supply.
So the longer one,
depending on where you go, is a backlog. So how long do they stay out?
Exactly.
How early do they test? Because kids are going out at the first day of symptoms, but they're not necessarily positive that day. So how long do they have to stay out? So it's done.
I'm just thinking there has to be some sort of way that we could utilize that here in the show. Whether it's, you know, we collectively discuss it with the superintendent of schools or, you know, whatever.
I was just going to say, this was one of those actionable items that a board of health could do. And I know other boards of health across the state are, you know, I mean, we're obviously pushing from the public health department side. But I think there's weight to be had if, you know, they hear from others as well.
So when you say hear from others as well, does that mean you want us to write a letter? Does that mean, I mean, you know, to a certain extent, what, you know, yes, we have some weight, but how do you want that weight to be?
I cannot dictate what I want. You will decide.
But maybe somebody should give us some suggestions and things we could discuss.
Who would we talk to?
So when we have met with schools, we met with the superintendents, the school nurses, and then they usually invite their other administrative staff to those meetings. District administrator or superintendent.
If one was to do this, what are some things that would be suggested to highlight in this discussion?
I think, you know, the fact that there's a lack of testing in Kenosha County, which relates to a lack of data and the lack of our ability to mitigate the disease spread.
Because we can't track the home test, and they are very prevalent in the schools. So what we show is our data is probably the worst it's ever been from a significant standpoint, because none of our home testing are included in our data. So our assumption is that if some of the schools are sitting at just shy of 3%, they're probably far more above that number than we know or that we can actually report.
We have, just as far as closures, again, we do not close schools, but we have the schools that they call us when they've reached a certain percentage. So we had a school, I don't know, it was probably 3 weeks ago now, that called us and they said, we're at over 3%. We wanted to give you a report of what's happening in the school. And we looked at our data and we said, we're only showing 1.6% of your student population. We have terrible data that is keeping us from mitigating this. And so there have been, you know, there was one district that closed all of their sixth grade. There was other schools that have been closed for a period of time. We are now seeing daycares as well. So, and again, the health department does not tell any of them to close. They seek us for guidance, you know, disinfection protocols, you know, to up their contact tracing or their quarantine protocols. And so, yeah, we help them through that. That's where it has sort of been hodgepodge all over the county.
So we start with a letter.
I will say, so if we were going to do this, what, should we start with a letter saying we are concerned about this? Is there a spot, or does somebody have some information that would be easily summarizing what this grant money is available? What are the steps school needs to go through it? I mean, do we have that somewhere in easily written, easily read?
I can forward you what the, so DHS has put together a whole toolkit for this, you know, exactly step by step what the schools can do and yada yada. And I can forward you that toolkit with all the information that they put together on how they can do this.
Okay. So, I mean, my concern is not only do we have bad data, we can't mitigate any of the spread, but the public doesn't know either that this is out there, that this is a possibility. And right now, what I'm seeing is that there is a small group of very loud people who are saying, we don't want masking, we don't want this, and we don't want that. And there are some people who are saying, I want my child to go homecoming, and I want my child to do this. There's a whole lot of other people who think that everything is hunky-dory and everything's fine, and they have no idea that the schools have decided that they don't want to access this testing that's available. And so while I'm quite happy to talk to and quite willing to talk to superintendents or anybody else, I also feel that I need to be out there explaining to the community that this is an opportunity for them, that this is a way that their child can be more safe and that their family can be more safe, and that if you are concerned about this and you want this, then you need to talk to the school system. I mean, like, I have absolutely no problem kind of hitting it from both ends, because I think that we have a responsibility to the community as well as to not making ruffling the feathers that might get ruffled.
I might start with the school system and see their concerns before I went to the public.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's probably a huge burden for the schools to be doing, too.
Or, you know, maybe there's liability issues similar to what you're concerned about with health nurses who are in the school doing it as well. I mean, I guess I don't know
if
what
the school signs on to it, there's indemnification agreements, and they are resolved. It's kind of like the Good Samaritan law. So if signing on to the state, and that was the whole reason for signing on to the state program, is that you're indemnified from that sort of, it's I don't know, John, I'm making up stuff, but it's like, it's like the state was, you were under the state guise if you participated in this program.
I mean, I would think that that would mean that by signing on, they would be protecting themselves, because right now, I mean, there are already people in other school systems that have sued the school system for not protecting their child. So, I mean, I'm not advocating, you know chaos, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying is there have been conversations that presumably you guys have had with the school system. They have kind of said, no, thank you. We can come in, but historically, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of change just because we write a letter or say we'd like to have a meeting. I mean, we can do that, but I think we need to be planning ahead for, all right, this is what we're doing, but this is also what we need to do to back it up.
No, I definitely agree with keeping the community abreast of what's going on, because I actually didn't know it was to this extent. Like, there is a program that releases the liability. I know, in terms of the individuals that were quite loud at the most recent meetings, now they need 100 signatures to petition to reverse those decisions made. But I just left somewhere, and I was like, well, I can't sign it because I don't really know what you're trying to reverse. But imagine if they had this information, that's something tangible, they can petition to reverse. So I do feel like if I don't know it, how well does the community know that this is an opportunity to save lives rather than political?
And again, I'll go ahead and say it. We are not part of the system. We are advisory. In a sense, that means we have a little more freedom than you do as the director, because you are beholden to the system within the county. But I think we as a board need to make some decisions about what we are capable or, comfortable with, and then...
Should we run?
I did not need that right now. Amber alert, it's an Amber.
Okay. This is a storm shelter, I think.
Yesterday was green, wasn't it? That weather was crazy yesterday. Yeah. Anyway, so I mean, I'm just saying that, historically, we have tended to kind of have meetings, whether they're virtual or in person, and we kind of take our time when we go through, we have 27 edits on the letter, and then the letter may or may not actually get sent, and, whatever. And I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think we have time for that. I was talking to some people earlier, you guys earlier, and saying the employees are really messed up because getting the help they need to know whether they have been exposed. Mm-hmm. And they are concerned because they, if they get sick and they cannot prove that they got it through a close contact at school, then they have to, they don't get paid when they're at home. And so it's a fiduciary issue for them because, financial, they can't prove that they got it at school because they haven't been given access to the information to know whether they were exposed. And this is one of those situations where the school system is saying, oh no, we're telling people because if this person is in this class, but they're not telling any of the support staff. So the lunchroom people, they have no idea. The school social worker, no clue. Psychologist, counselor, anybody in the office, they have no idea whether this person has been exposed, but yet they're responsible for knowing who the close contacts are. And so, I think there is a systemic KUSD issue, and I'm sure they'd be thrilled to have Jen show up and say that. she's like, why not? Let's get somebody else mad. But I mean, again, I think we have there's a big mess out there, and I don't know how we as a board are going to help fix that, but I mean, I think there are things that we need to be saying, because these are things we are hearing from the community, and we need to speak up for the community.
And just so you're aware, the testing, there's three levels to the testing. They can be event specific. So there have been schools around the state who have them come in the Wednesday before homecoming and test everyone, so they can try to figure out who can go to homecoming. So they can be event specific. It can be outbreak specific. So if a school is having an outbreak, and I think soon they're having daycares onto that. Mm-hmm. So then they can come in and just do testing for like a one-time outbreak, or it can be weekly or bi-weekly or monthly. Like it can be like a regular randomized testing kind of thing as well too.
And is it just you're testing everyone, or is it just that if somebody's symptomatic, they can go and get it?
So what the state does is they train whoever in the school to do the testing or to monitor the testing. So you get paired with a lab. So some labs are doing like, let's say the self swab. So then they train, whoever in the school. So that could be like the school nurse or whatever, but they train them to watch a kid swab their own nose and make sure it was done correctly. So it's not us testing them. It's this lab that sets up the training and the testing and the shipping so that they can get their results.
But I guess I'm asking specifically. So you said it's outbreak specific, it is event specific, or it can be
a school can choose, yeah.
But what about, can it be that, Sally Smith shows up to her third grade classroom and
correct,
sniffling,
it can be that too, yes.
Can she go down to the office and get a COVID test?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think different labs will have, whether they're doing it rapid right there or if they send the kid home until the test results come back, or they each, depending upon their test, and have their specifics.
So some options I could say, you can do the letter of the editor, you can do contact one of the reporters and have them do an article.
I think that's unfair to the school system to not address it with them first.
Right.
Because they may have a very valid reason why they're not willing to participate. But I don't know that going to the public first
But I think we just fair.
Right.
Well, that kind of letter lets offer, hope to hear from you by this date,
right,
so we can already stagger perhaps the next move.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think that's a better way to go about it.
Also, just thinking that maybe I just kind of follow up on what you're doing is to ask the school district to see if they can create a small committee. If they can get together with us, the group of us, and then so that we can do a brainstorm. And perhaps maybe we can find a solution, well, maybe not a solution, but get some ideas on how do we move forward with it, and then just create a plan of action. I think it's just a thought that maybe if there's a possibility.
Yeah, and I think also, painting this picture of it's not kids getting tested, is when we look at the S show from last year of how many students didn't have access to like wireless and computers. So it is a holistic problem. It's not just, get tested. It's like if this kid goes home,
they don't have equal opportunity to receive the education you say you want to give them based on what happened last year. You know, so I think getting hopefully a full picture for them, I don't know, offers more insight.
They're not offering virtual, though.
Well, that's okay. That still, that as a major issue.
Okay. You go home, you're on your own, or you contact the teacher and say, they send me something.
Yeah. Which when tests are taking 5 days.
Yep.
And that's the first test, you know, again, so you tested 5 days, it comes back negative, if you don't have symptoms or they're no worse than allergies, you're going back and infecting everybody else.
Yeah, so most of our tests are coming back within 24, 48 hours still, yeah, right now. I'd say one of our pharmacies chains had for a while, they were in 8 days. Are they better now? They're better than 8 days. So it ebbs and flows with the amount of tests, but.
Ours were 5 days in September through Walgreens. I don't know whether that was your chain, but that was my chain. Okay, it was a disaster.
So Dr. Al, even considering that, does the public know that?
Anyway, we did this.
Okay, so anyone with kids, we're assuming direct blind parent, parental or guardian contact, how many of these kids are going home to certain grandparents and all of that? So now everybody has some information, but there's another point of what does the public really know what's happening? So all they know is mask, no mask.
And just on the masking issue, our epidemiologist has pulled together some data because we know which school districts are masking and which are not. Those that are optional or recommended, which are one and the same essentially, are having almost twice the case rate of KUSD, which is masking.
Can we make a little blurb and post that on our Facebook page and all of that? Because that information...
I think that goes back to the saying we don't want to... we just got that this morning, and I wouldn't want to shame or embarrass the schools with that, but we can share it with the schools.
No, again, this is a public thing because if I have a child who is attending XYZ school and they have decided not to have masking, but yet we have data that proves that kids in the neighboring school system who is masking, they are safer, then I should have that data as a parent to be able to talk to my school and say.
Right, and I think, you know, absolutely we could share it with the schools. What they decide to put on their school board agenda or share publicly is a different situation.
But shouldn't we as a health department say, we are simply giving the data. This is what, you know, we have been asked, does masking work? Here's the data that we are seeing. Now, we could say that obviously when you're interpreting that data, it could mean that people who live in XYZ County or district are more likely to be wandering around without a mask and going to concerts and God knows what else. But, I mean, I think it's important that we let the community know what is out there and what is going on. I can see giving it to the schools first, and I understand that we don't want to embarrass, but there's a difference between saying, I don't want to embarrass, but also I'm also not going to communicate any form. And I think that we as a health department need to really be working on just general informing. You do with this what you want. You know, you as the director of public health are not out there going, see, I told you you needed the mask. You know, you stay back and kind of let us say, guys, here's the data.
I think, too, if we're looking at, like, them trying to reverse the masking at AUSD, that does need to be brought out, you know, that people are making informed decisions. Because I think there's still a lot of people out there who don't believe that masking is really helpful. And that's some pretty tangible data when you're looking in the same community.
So I think a lot of people who don't believe in the mask don't really care if they get sick either.
I'm not quite sure how you effectively get that message out. But two, I ask folks all the time when they see an appointment, you know, do you get the vaccine? I mean, just, and the line has gotten so drawn that I don't know what you can do to change some of these lines. I mean, it's just.
Oh, we lost a huge percentage of our staff.
I know.
So in this letter,
It's, and I get, we want, you know, what I know about working with KUSD, they can be very finicky and very territorial. They want to feel like they're, you know, obviously in charge of their school district, which is why they're there. Perhaps in this letter, what about offering something of, you know, we have the data that shows the disparities between schools. How do you feel it's best to make the public aware of it? Get their input, but also knowing we do need to inform. If they say, no, we don't want that out, you know. So I think we need to play nice with them. That's what I'm hearing.
I mean, absolutely. We have good relationships with all the school districts. I mean, we, from last June 2020, are meeting with them weekly, sharing data, intelligence, you know, guidance. We reviewed every single one of their policies. And yeah, and they're all different this year, and they've all chosen their own route, and that's their choice. So I think they're, and you know, when we just got some preliminary information 2 weeks ago from like Ohio, Cleveland, and a few other districts, again, showed nationally how schools that are masked have much, much lower rates than schools that are not masked. So we did share that with them as well too. So they know.
Response?
Silence?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think if I can interject for a second, I think one of the techniques you could use is to thank them for having that masking policy in place and to show them how effective that has been. You know, say, great job, KUSD, you guys hit the nail on the head. Wonderful, wonderful that you're doing this to protect the children and the lives that they touch every day. And then you say, hey, we also have heard there's another opportunity for schools to get involved in testing. Would you be willing to have that discussion with us? So you pat her on the back, say, you guys are good, and they did, they made a good decision there. And you have the data that can say, look, not only here, but nationally, look what masking does. And then you come back to them saying, and as a result, if you'd like to continue those efforts, here's another opportunity we'd like to discuss with you. And you know they have a school board, and that school board is just as divided as any committee we go in front of, with the exception of you guys, thank you. So they got things that they have to work with there too, but I think you thank them and then say, here's an opportunity for more involvement if you're willing to have that discussion. So just my suggestion how you should approach it.
Do they already know about John Grant?
All the schools have been made aware multiple times about the testing opportunity.
Well, you just find out then why they're not doing it, or you just have that discussion.
I mean, it's
I
like that idea of, you know, well, thank them, say this is, you know, some other opportunity, but now let's get together and brainstorm how we can make, you know, how we can assist you with doing this for the future or whatever. But I like that idea of, you know, offering our services essentially to help them figure out how they could make it happen.
And I would just say, because when we were meeting with all 11 districts and all the private programs together, so it is radio silence on these calls, that the one-on-one per district is probably a better, you know, better, more communicative.
So when you send that toolkit, can you also send whatever data you have from locally in there so that we can make sure we're including that in our whatever we address to them?
Well, maybe just somehow I've missed this a little bit. My kids in my life are an hour and a half away in a real rural area that makes us look good, scary. But some of the folks aren't even here today, you know, and so just to sort of outline the problem and the concern, because I wasn't aware of, well, I don't have kids in the district. I mean, I'm out of that loop. We only see adults. And, so I think it would help just as a background to lay out exactly what the problems and, you know, issues, options are.
You know,
we
have the virtual school option. I mean,
And I just want to clarify, like, when, like, for example, the one district closed down their whole sixth grade, they did offer schooling for them. So when there's, like, a big something, we're hearing that they are offering school, but for like the one kid who's quarantined or the one off, it's more like a chicken pox situation. Hey, teach, send me all the stuff that I'm missing for the next week.
You know, though, it is like when you think about how far behind our children are going to be to begin with after being in that nightmare in 2020 of like no support, and then, you know, all the virtual school and the lack of resources for many of our kids, and, you know, how far behind they probably already are. Now we're going to throw them, you know, into, they've got a sniffle, so they have to get out of school for 5 days. You know, our kids can't afford to be any further behind in their education.
I just want to see them alive, you know.
Well, let me finish some COVID updates real quick here.
Sorry for that.
No, I love it. Our call center's been bumping. There's so much confusion around boosters and can I get my booster and which booster and blah, blah, blah. So there's just a lot of questions. We had a clinic right out here in the hallway last Friday. Of course, we were ready for 600 and we vaccinated 37. boosters. Part of the problem is, you know, like last winter and spring we were here like every Wednesday and Friday, so people got used to just knowing. So this was a surprise in all fairness. We do have the first three Fridays in November, we'll be doing additional clinics here. We are prepared and already ready for the 5 to 11-year-olds to be coming through those clinics. So we do think the November clinics will be bigger. Of course, our message is pushing people to their providers, that we're sort of the measure of last resort, you know, for people that maybe don't have a provider on another insured, undocumented, you know, have whatever concerns or issues that they need to come to the health department. So this is sort of, we're not ramping back up into shop home, we're not ramping back up into, you know, we're going to do these three Fridays in November and reassess where our rates are at that time.
Is this for the 5 to 11-year-olds and boosters?
This is for all of the above.
Okay.
Even first time?
First time, second time, third time, kids.
Can you give me a quick tutorial on what's happening with the boosters? Like which ones here, which ones don't?
So right now it's Pfizer is available for boosters and Moderna only if you're immunocompromised. We don't ask for proof on that. If you say you're immunocompromised, you're getting your third Moderna. So that is where it is right now. In the coming months, it will be Moderna and J&J's second dose as a booster. And
Pfizer right now is basically over 65, immune compromised.
But it's all essential workers.
Essential hybrid.
Frontline workers, and we don't ask. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I'd say my.
Are you giving your kids COVID in the clinic?
Aurora's plan is to roll it out so that every primary care office is giving the COVID vaccine. But right now, Pleasant Prairie can give it out, each clinic there, and the pharmacy at Hyderabad. They've not rolled it out to the rest.
Because, you know, I don't know that it's going to, from when these 5 to 11-year-olds get approved, hopefully.
They had hoped to get it rolled out to everybody, but they're dragging their feet.
But, I mean, and that's just one, and I don't know that Children's is offering it yet either. I have to look. But
they will be. They've applied to be a vaccine provider as well. And just for clarity, like, October 26th is the meeting of the FDA. Right. It may take a couple days after that. Then it goes to the CDC. Then it goes to the ACIP. Then it comes down to the state and goes through our SDMAC, which is the State Disaster Medical Advisory Council. Then it comes down. Then we send our medical order to Dr. Gerlach. And then we can get a vaccine. So it's like a week at minimum. So just because it's all over the night and the news like, FDA approved it, doesn't mean we will get bombarded the following day with phone calls. And that doesn't mean we can give shots that day. It has to go through all the channels to make sure it's completely safe.
So you expect about a week?
Yeah, so we're planning for the first week of November. I mean, we're ready whenever it comes, but yeah.
So the boosters that you're giving now, you said you're going to have the clinics the first three Fridays in November. Are you doing anything like in the office? How does that work now?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting about, 10 to 15 people a day that want their booster. So it's a slow but steady. It's not a rush.
And they just come in?
They set an appointment or they walk in. At both of our clinics, both the in the uptown area and over on the other end of the building here. So yeah, people have been trickling in. We keep in touch with Aurora and Freighter, and they're telling us, you know, saying they're sending out their blast emails to all their patients, and they're getting a slow but steady stream of people getting boosters too.
Can I ask a pharmacological question? Is the booster something that's been changed from the original to address the Delta?
Just
making sure.
And just so think of it, remember, because I think it's an mRNA, which think of it as like that's the teacher. It's not like you're getting some injected level of something. It's the teacher cell that's going around teaching all your cells, hey, remember this guy we taught you last winter when you got this shot? This is what it looks like again. So it's just like a reminder to your cells to know how to fight.
How often would one have to get a booster?
You have to go.
That is the million-dollar question. It's scientists everywhere are researching now. I mean, it could very easily become like the annual flu shot. So that's what we're, you know, seeing the long term.
I heard Moderna was working on a combo flu shot booster so that it would be a one-shot deal as opposed to a two-shot deal.
That'd be nice. Absolutely, just like the MMR was, you know, combining measles, mumps, and rubella. I mean, so yeah, there's so much work happening pharmacologically right now. So real quick, just on some non-COVID news, because we do have all of our other 60 programs and services. Just an update, we have a few positions open. We're having a heck of a time getting candidates. So we are struggling to get qualified candidates into some of these open positions. Nurses are hard to come by. We didn't get the surge from Aurora applying for our jobs. So we're really looking at that, and it's hurting. We've had our disease investigator for temporary employees open, I don't know, for a month and a half, and we've hired like four or five. We're just not getting applicants, so we're hurting without the staff to be able to help us do all of that. Our lab is a little bit backlogged. This is, if one instrument, our compressor went down on one instrument, it takes a very long time for the companies to come in and fix it. So we're working with other labs to be able to offload like our blood for blood alcohol content and whatnot to have others get us caught back up. So this comes into play when you hear about there's a future COVID response money that will allow us to look at our electronic medical record, our laboratory equipment, and to really, it's like a one-time shot to be able to kind of modernize. Software for our laboratory is over $20,000 each, so I mean, these are expensive things. So in the future, we'll look at that, and we'll be better. We're doing a lot around workforce development right now, human trafficking training, LGBTQ+, mandatory reporting training. We're trying to get all caught back up with a whole new workforce and getting people caught back up with all the things they need for public health responding to their regular jobs. Of course, you heard about the SAMHSA grant, and restaurants, I just wanted to mention, we are finally able to get fully back into restaurants. Of course, after a period of a hiatus, there has been a lot of issues, and of course, they're having staffing issues as well, too. So that's turning into sort of a new way of thinking of restaurant inspection. It's sort of turning into this counseling of how they can maintain standards and so that's becoming a much bigger issue for us as well, too. So my one last piece that I wanted to share was on October 25th, we're having an all-staff meeting. We did the one last October as well, too. And this is our chance as all staff to just kind of come together. It has a heavy focus on equity and what we're doing with our equity strategic plan. And that will also come to you in the November Board of Health meeting and to let you know what's happening around that whole, after those conversations Kirsten had with all of you around our equity strategic plan and how we're moving the needle on that forward. And we're also at that all staff meeting doing an after action report on the pandemic response to date. So anytime we've ever had an exercise or an event, like the flooding event a few years ago, public health is required to do an after action report. That's a federal grant requirement. And we did a minor one last July 2020. We are doing another one now based upon the vaccination clinics of all the spring. And so that is happening at that all staff as well, too. So we'll share those results with you. It'll probably be a couple months after by the time you type. It's a Homeland Security requirement. It's like a 30-page document. It's quite a big report. So we'll share that with you when that gets done as well, too. And that's all I had in other news. Oh, and lead. We're working with many pediatricians, with WIC. Everything lead testing has sort of fallen off, but yet we're seeing cases rise, largely because kids have been at home more, you know, crawling through the windowsills and the door jams that are full of lead dust. And so we have worked out a brand new protocol internally so that both our nursing side and our environmental side, and with the HUD grant, we can be a little bit more streamlined on how we take care of lead cases. And if you'd like to see that policy, I can share that with you. It's 99% almost done. And so we continue to recommend that people, just so you know, a lot of these lead tests have been recalled, but we can still do venous blood draws to test kiddos for lead. So we're working with labs on that increase there as well, too, like at Children's.
All right, thank you. Corporate counsel.
Nothing really to report.
Anyone else have any other questions?
I have one more question. I'm just wondering, are they mandating, is the health department not mandating a vaccine? Since you mentioned that you were expecting a surge from Aurora.
Mandating a vaccine?
You mean like, is the county?
Yeah, I mean, are the health department staff required to have?
No.
They're not. Is that because there's like, it doesn't fall under, I mean, I would think obviously the county hires more than 100 people, but.
I think that's an issue that they're still waiting to get more feedback from.
Okay.
On that, you know, what passed through Biden's administration, and certainly corporation counsel would be involved in that discussion with our human resources and the impact it would have on, you know, the nursing homes, social work staff, all that. So that's still up in the air right now.
Okay, my one thing being is that maybe not all of the other county entities, but the health department as being, showing a good example,
I think
that they are required to have the vaccine. I don't know, I'm just curious.
Do you know what the percentages, maybe not required, but do we know what the percentage is of people in the health department?
I can get you the exact percentage, it is well over 95%.
Okay.
Thank God. So, yeah, that comment made me super nervous that, you know, we have a bunch of unvaccinated nurses in the health department, and I think.
I would not say much. I would not say much. There's a select few health department employees who are not.
Are you advertising that is not required?
Advertising it is not required?
For job, when you do the jobs.
No, upon like hiring, we don't even ask the candidate, we don't even mention it, yeah.
Yeah, I know, you've been saying that it's hard to get nurses to fill all these positions, and that has been a huge job attraction for a lot of people, and is, hey, I'm happy to get it right now. Sure, ideally you will want them to, but.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously, you know, we're the health department, we have vaccine. You go down right now, I can get you vaccinated. I mean, so all of our staff knows it's here, we can get them at any time.
Yeah.
I mean, we had some latecomers who needed time to think, and, you know, they know all of the, you know, their peers in the health department. So they know it's available at any time. And you know, supervisors have had conversations.
And any other questions, comments?
I would like to make a comment on the still on the COVID issues. I have a small translation service for the Hispanic community. And on a daily basis, I have people coming from Mexico and Guatemala, Honduras, and Salvador. And it's getting crazy. And it's almost like everybody comes to me and says, oh, I think next week 10 more families are coming. And it just keeps rolling and rolling. And the good thing is that they are these people. They are people from the very far away from city people. That they don't know how to read, they don't know how to write, and they don't even know how to speak Spanish or English. And I am trying to deal with some of these people and trying to help them out. But at the same token, I'm very concerned that there's a lot of people out there that they are not even heard about COVID. They do not, what is that? Well, what do they need to do in order to be safe or help us, all of us, to be safe? So I'm getting a little concerned here.
Absolutely, call us. We can send out a nurse anytime into your office. I mean, so like we want to take care of them. We want them to know that we have our clinics, you know, depending upon where they're living. I mean, we have so many services that we can, you know, help provide. So let us know if you know, and of course, we have, you know, all the Spanish speakers too that can come out and communicate with them and, you know, work through any of the services or any needs they might have. Or if it's not something we provide, we can refer to all the other divisions and, you know, services in the community as well, too.
Yeah, having a private clinic has been really good for a couple places.
Yeah, so please let us know.
Yeah, who do I talk to?
You can reach out to Kirsten. I know you and her have talked a lot, and she can connect. Yeah.
All right. We'll start something. Thank you.
I agree. to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you all for coming.
So you're going to send out the information, and then some of us are going to start writing letters.